Hello, grandkids, and welcome to the oddly numbered Stunt Granny audio number 499.5. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Chris Calamito. What is going on, good sir?
Not a heck of a lot there, Kevin. How about yourself there?
Well, it was fantastic stumbling over the number simply because we have a special guest host next week. So we're saving the official 500, but we know that we're like way over 500 at this point. So I'm not sure that it really matters. I know that Jeremy and I, just alone, if you count the WrestleMania preview shows, I would imagine we might be closer to 600 than 500, just counting those. And yeah, if you add the We Watch stuff and OPAs to the catalog,
oh, those don't count.
Those
are separate shows under the Stunt Granny umbrella.
Yeah, that is true. But there are some other wrestling related ones that have not fallen under the SGA numbering system. So yeah, we're reserving that for our special guest host who's coming back after quite some time. But with Ken, oh, actually I should have put the picture of Ken is down in Clearwater, Florida, and ran into this terrible statue of Hulk Hogan down there, and he took his picture with it. Oh, and it is pretty awful. It definitely would not pass the Madame Tussauds list of fakes, and even those are not particularly good more times than not, to be honest with you. But yeah, he's out of town, so I actually decided to hit you up not last minute, because you know, getting Ken to reply to me occasionally is not an easy task. So yeah, we set this one up earlier in the week, and we decided that we would talk a little bit of other stuff, since Jeremy and I covered Raw and SmackDown. We are going to cover the NXT to start with, and then see where things go from there.
Sounds good, Kevin.
And, well, I guess the big thing, because there really wasn't, there weren't a whole lot of matches on this week's NXT. It obviously, we could start with the big thing, which was the five-person match to determine who was going to face Johnny Gargano in the best, because did Triple H announce that it was going to be a best two out of three falls match?
Yes, he did.
Okay.
Yeah, he definitely did.
Johnny Gargano was already slated to be in the NXT Championship match. He gets to stay in that position and not have to fight for it. Then they put pretty much all their top names in one match to determine who would be the opponent for Mr. Gargano. And I guess it was not, to me, Matt Riddle did not seem like he was going to get the nod. It would have been really strange to me for Aleister Black or Ricochet to get the nod, since they're already in the Dusty Classic Finals and they've been getting quite a push on the main roster. So that really left Velveteen Dream and Adam Cole to me is the main picks in that matchup.
And Velveteen Dream is already the North American champion.
he's been building up a feud
with Matt Riddle for several weeks now. So and then process of elimination, you have Adam Cole.
That is not surprisingly who ended up winning it. That match, it was one that I was like, oh man, this thing, that was a real ball. Other than the one move that you called into question, which
I don't have any All right, yeah, let's just get it out of the way right now. The triple superplex spot, I have no idea what they were thinking with that one. I don't know if they were thinking that Riddle and Black on the other side were going for Russian leg sweeps, or I don't know. It almost looked like Johnny Gargano, who took the move, was in the best shape of all of them.
No, wasn't it Ricochet that took the move?
Oh, Ricochet, that's right. I said Gargano. I want to say Gargano. He's only in the match.
It was really, well, if you see a spot like that, I guess you normally expect someone like, let's say Big Show, just as an easy example of like, okay, they need to team up on this guy just to be able to suplex him. And while I marvel at Ricochet's strength for his size, he still isn't particularly big, all things considered. So why even two people need to superplex him is perplexing. The fact that four people needed to join into this whole equation was exceptionally strange. But again, to me, that was the only really kind of weird part of that match.
Yeah, that was definitely a weird part of the match. But yeah, otherwise, you know, the match was very, very good. You know, your modern athletic style of match. You know, everyone very good at that style. And in the end, I like that after everyone else had, you know, done every big move in the book and, you know, and had essentially exhausted themselves, Adam Cole, the heel, with the more conservative style, sneaks in and gets the win. That I liked.
Yeah, for as much as maybe the match itself was the modern style, that finish was definitely old school, heel sneaking in, not really doing a lot of the damage in the match. I mean, he did do his fair share of damage. But, you know, he really hadn't been involved in the action too much near that end part. And he just sneaks in. He gives Ricochet the old knee to the head as he's kind of celebrating what he's assuming is going to be a win. And gets the somewhat cheap win. And, again, I think that was pretty old school and very heelish of Adam Cole to do. Because as much as he gets a crowd reaction with his Adam Cole, baby, they really do position him as a heel in pretty much every situation, in his promos, in how cocky he is. You know, like, every way that he is presented definitely screams heel.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Adam Cole, you know, is definitely a heel, and he's that. And right now, he essentially with Chomp Out, he essentially has to be the top heel on the brand. He gets the match with Gargano, yeah, 2 out of 3 falls. I mean, should be an excellent match. And I am really thinking that, man, would Gargano look like a chump after all this if he doesn't finally win the NXT Championship?
Yeah, I would feel really bad for him if he doesn't win it. I know that it doesn't quite have the same pop for him winning it if it's not over Ciampa, but as you said, he just kind of looks like a schmuck if he doesn't win it. And he's already really, what, he, one of them was the title match against Ciampa, right?
Yeah.
And yep. Has he had another couple of title shots during his reign in NXT?
Yeah, we got a couple of shots against him on Andrade.
Okay, yeah.
And then, you know, started this feud with Ciampa and, you know, really just started being, you know, after winning the first match, he lost the next two, went through his, you know, kind of kind of sort of heel turn, I guess we'll call it now, but where he never totally embraced being a heel.
Right. Yeah.
And
agreed.
Now he's, you know, completely back being a babyface. I mean, in certain parts of the wrestling Twitterverse, you'll find people who think this whole Gargano story has been genius, and people who feel that they lost the plot sometime after WrestleMania last year. Yeah. I'm probably, in the middle on that. I mean, I think they played themselves a little too much here, and you hit that moment where it just goes, oh, come on.
It might have worked a little bit better if he'd done a little bit more of a full embrace of the heel persona, but for the most part, I've really liked the story over time between those two. And obviously, in the semifinals of the Dusty Classic, when they lost to Ricochet, they lost to Ricochet and Black, didn't they?
Yeah.
With Gargano kind of faking the injury, he really did kind of come full back into the babyface fold, and I guess I wasn't as upset about people, because I definitely read some people being pissed off about him being a heel. But honestly, like, the majority of work that I saw him do in New Ohio Wrestling, Pro Wrestling Ohio, yeah, and Prime Wrestling, he was a heel the whole time, and I thought he was pretty good at it, honestly, especially considering how young he was at the time, since it was like 11, 12 years ago. So I do think that he can play that part well. It might be a little bit harder to do that on the main roster for him. I think he'd be a lot better off playing the underdog babyface, which, obviously he's played more in NXT. But yeah, with the size of the roster, because I mean, he's not going to look like him and Adam Cole are about the same size. It's not like him taking on Lars Sullivan or even Aleister Black. He's not that big of a guy, but he's really tall. So he definitely makes someone like Gargano, who's all of 5'8", look pretty short. I guess I'm a little bit towards the positive side with the whole story, but maybe it wasn't the best thing, but it also is like, what, going on 2 years that they've been telling this story? And it's been interesting for more time than not in that two-year time
period. Definitely has. I mean, part of the issues were, that Aleister Black was injured at a certain point, so they, instead of doing a triple threat match at the Brooklyn Takeover before SummerSlam, it ended up being another singles match between Gargano and Ciampa that Gargano lost. And, that kind of hurts things. But overall, I do think that, overall, it's been a pretty good story. It hasn't been perfect, but it really does. Even taking Tommaso Ciampa out of the equation, as we kind of mentioned earlier, the Johnny Gargano story in NXT is not complete until he wins the NXT championship. And some people can go from NXT to the main roster and have a good run, and having never won that title, but I think Gargano needs that. Gargano's story needs the NXT title for it to be complete.
Yeah, I just think that the amount of time that he's spent in NXT at this juncture, because it's another thing that ties a little bit into the Adam Cole thing. They really must have been testing out whether Adam Cole and Gargano could have a good match, or at least they just started testing it in Columbus when they were starting that NXT tour, because it was very shortly after Ciampa had hurt himself.
Oh, okay.
So they did actually have their first, because he mentioned after the match that that was the first time that him and Adam Cole had faced off in an NXT ring. So I did kind of get a little bit of a chuckle out of it that he was advertising their match at TakeOver is the first time in NXT. But, yeah, they tested the waters a little bit here, and I guess to me there's no reason that, or you didn't really need to do that. They're two excellent wrestlers, definitely on the smaller side of things. But I've liked Adam Cole's work in ROH. I still like what he's doing now. But yeah, to get back to that, oh, and I guess during Gargano's speech here, he's like, 4 years ago when I came here for my first NXT tour, I'm like, dear God, you've been in NXT for 4 years?
Yes, he has. Yeah, it's been a long time for him and Ciampa both. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's... He doesn't necessarily need a long reign as NXT champion before he goes to the main roster, but I do think he needs one.
Yeah, and that was...
And he can still moonlight on the main roster like he's been doing, although they have pulled back on... They pulled back on Gargano when Ciampa was injured, and then, for some reason this week, only Ricochet was working matches. Oh, that's right. I remember now.
Yeah.
Alistair Black and Zelina Vega were having their honeymoon this week, so both were off. That's right.
Correct. Yeah, so, yeah, Gargano definitely seems like he's going to be, and I guess that's kind of weird for him in some ways. It definitely seems like they wanted to keep him and Ciampa as a tag team on the main roster.
Yeah, and but then...
yeah.
And NXT, they were...
they were feuding.
They're still going to be feuding. Yeah, it was going to be... Interesting to see if Ciampa never was injured, how that was all going to work out. Whether they were going to mention... It'd be hilarious if they were still teaming on Raw and SmackDown while feuding in NXT and not even mentioning it.
yeah, that would have been weird and awkward, not really, thankfully, that is not going to happen. I mean, I just feel bad for Ciampa, who has had definitely his fair share of injuries. And really, that video package did kind of highlight that, because even the surgeon's like, yeah, he's been in here a little too often, was basically what he said.
Yeah, but yeah.
It's just like, yeah. Oof.
Ciampa's definitely has had some really bad luck over the years.
Yeah, and I mean, it honestly wasn't just in NXT, because he missed like a year in Ring of Honor for a reason, I don't know if it was a blown ACL or some. I think that might have been what it was, where he missed some pretty major time when he was there. You know, I think they said that was his second time in 2 years, and because he had the knee surgery and was out for 9 months or whatever it was. And then there's this, and I guess that was a thing that was a little bit surprising, is that they didn't really blame it. I remember hearing that it was because of the one match that they had on Raw, but the surgeon really seemed to indicate that it was just kind of a lingering problem that couldn't be fixed without the surgery. So it really didn't seem like he was saying that it was that one specific match on Raw that he got kind of dropped on his head that caused the problem. It was more of an accumulation
right.
type of injury. So, yeah, I mean, just kind of terrible timing for him. all together, you know, just kind of, again, you know, 4 years in NXT or so, and finally getting the call up, and probably going to be out for about a calendar year. That's a tough one to take. So yeah, it'll be interesting. I do think that, like you said, that Gargano kind of needs this title reign to really kind of complete his NXT run, even if they do call him up shortly after that. Like, he's done everything else on that brand. Like, there's, right. He kind of needs it. Like, obviously Elias didn't need an NXT title run to stay on the main roster.
Right, no.
And I'm sure that there are a few other examples, but that's just one that's popping into my head right now. Anything else to say about that main event, really?
Nothing else really to say about the main event. As part, fallout from the main event, they did have Regal go on Twitter to officially make Velveteen Dream versus Matt Riddle for the North American Championship at TakeOver New York. That should be a good one. I see that as a mix or a clash of styles in a good way. I think those two could have a very different style of match than, you know, maybe anything else on that card, or maybe anything else WrestleMania weekend.
Riddle's kind of an interesting character to me. You know, because he has that, in some ways it's similar to Ronda Rousey, where he has that very laid-back bro persona, but you also know that he was a legit fighter, and he's completely ripped. So it's not hard, and he's a pretty big guy, especially, you know, like, he's not going to look small when he gets called up to the main roster. Like, he's not the tallest guy, but he's definitely a thick guy. And, yeah, he just has a very different style than anyone else in NXT because of the UFC background. And I guess I still, like, I didn't see him much on the indies, and he hasn't really been in NXT for all that long, so I haven't seen a lot of him. And I would imagine that match will be the longest match that I will have seen him in, which, you know, it'll be interesting to see him get tested like that, to me. Like, Velveteen's been in matches that long at this point, so there's nothing to really explore, I guess, other than how he deals with someone, you know, with such a different moveset like Matt Riddle.
And Velveteen has, I think he actually has, you know, obviously he adds his flamboyant charisma into everything he does, but he actually has a pretty, you know, basic moveset, you know, nothing. I mean, he's got good height and good tops on his flying elbow. He's a good athlete in that respect.
Right.
But he's able to, because he's got a good basic style, I think he's able to adjust to everyone else's style and have, you know, every situation he's been in where he's been tested, he's pretty much come, other than maybe the one match he had with EC3 which may actually have been the weakest match on a takeover in some time. You know,
right.
His matches with Gargano, matches with Ciampa and Aleister Black and Ricochet have all been excellent on these takeover specials.
Yeah, as usual, the NXT card in general is shaping up as something that Jeremy and I talked about whether we felt like going to another WrestleMania. It's something that's always worth being said, but I had to watch three NXTs to kind of catch up to do this show, and it was super easy to watch that 3 hours in the last 24 hours. You know, like it's easy to watch, and that card. I guess it'll be interesting to me to see the four-way women's match, which was touched upon at least through promo.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. Yeah, that match. Once again, it's like anything else, almost everything else on that card. I mean, we don't really know what was. I mean, I don't want to spoil for you the result of the Dusty.
Oh,
you know, for the tag title match, but you know, that might be more of the X factor of, you know, maybe that will be a match that maybe doesn't necessarily work as well, but the four way will absolutely I think work with those ladies all in there.
I guess I could allude to something else that was talked about, but I'll save that for after the ladies talk. I mean, you definitely, even though Bianca's, more of, to me, more of a baby face than she is a heel, she definitely has the cockiness factor that more people would attribute to a heel.
Yeah, she definitely does. She's still, I think, in an in-between phase with the character. And putting her against, you know, Kairi Sane and Io Shirai, who are so, you know, so virtuous in their characters, I think it, I don't know, she said it still puts Bianca in a heelish light when she's confronting them, but obviously pretty much anyone is a babyface with a Shayna Baszler, who's a, you know, a great heel, you know, just this mean bully heel, you know. So it's a good deal, and I like what they did with, you know, Shayna Baszler without any help choked out all three women, and then she said that no one of them deserves a title shot. So of course she gets all of them. But that was a good storyline progression there. And so no, I think I certainly look forward to this match. I wouldn't surprise me to see a new champion, in particular for it to be Bianca Belair. And I think that it'll be interesting to see what they do as far as Shayna Baszler is concerned, because Shayna could walk onto the main roster at any time.
Oh,
but
for sure,
Marina and Jessamine still need quite a bit of work. So I don't know if they'll bring them up to the main roster too.
Yeah, because I mean, Shayna can, I mean, cause they really, even though they've, mentioned, her in conjunction with, Ronda Rousey, should Ronda Rousey stick around, she can function without Ronda Rousey without any problems. Yeah. But like you said,
Shayna absolutely can. And you know what? If they want to do the horsewoman versus horsewoman battle, not Shayna, but Jessamine and Marina might be passable enough to make that work now.
Yeah, I would think so. But they certainly have. They've noticeably kept them off of TV here recently after kind of throwing them. I was a little bit surprised when they got a match with, Io Shirai and Kairi Sane, but, they've been noticeably absent, since then. And, yeah, I mean, they're both. Shayna Baszler's been a professional wrestler for kind of a while now. She is definitely not as much as a newbie to this style as those two are. So I mean, they just, not everyone's going to learn it. Even if you're in the UFC, not everyone's going to learn it as quickly as Ronda Rousey has.
Right, no.
You can be a great athlete and still not learn professional wrestling psychology as quickly as some other people that have picked it up quickly. And yeah, they definitely weren't as great at the UFC as Rousey was either. So there might be something to be said for that part too. Yeah, so I guess that'll be kind of interesting to see what they do. I could see Belair winning it and kind of being more the heel and still having Kairi Sane and Io Shirai challenge for it.
Yeah, you could definitely do that. There certainly has been some clamoring to do since, Bayley and Sasha have said that, they're gonna defend the women's championships at some point in NXT. That maybe at a future takeover, you do Bayley and Sasha versus the Sky Pirates as a match, and I would certainly look forward to that.
Yep, I pe not pencil me down for that one. You can carve that one in stone for me. I'd be down for that. So yeah, there are a lot of options with those two. And I'm trying to think of what other women are really down there, honestly, that can challenge for the women's title other than those two. Because with Lacey Evans vacating NXT, that kind of leaves you with one less option
Right.
on the table. Because I don't, it did kind of, I don't know if because Vanessa Bourne, and I'm trying to think of who the other woman was that they kind of seem like they're in cahoots now, and they might keep them a team. And
Aaliyah?
Aaliyah.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're going to keep them a team, but they certainly seem to me, the last time they were on TV, they seem to be leaning that way, in my opinion.
Yeah, it looks like Aaliyah has now Aaliyah has been in NXT for a really, really long time as well. She's never really gotten all that much traction going for herself. I mean, her and Liv Morgan were regular tag team partners a couple of years ago.
Oh, okay.
Essentially, not exactly amassing a stellar win-loss record, and then Liv Morgan's on the main roster as part of the Riot Squad, and Aaliyah's still trying to find herself in NXT.
Yeah, that's not good news for Aaliyah. I guess I hadn't realized that she was quite there for that long. I
I
mean,
mean, she's.
I've been watching NXT pretty regularly now, I would say for 2 years, probably not more than that. But yeah, I guess she kind of has been on the roster that whole time, pretty much.
Yeah, she's the only woman who's still there when Charlotte, Becky, and Sasha were still there.
Oof. Yeah. That's not a good position to be in for her. But
No, but
yeah,
they've kept her.
they've kept her, and but I mean, it also does seem like, neither of them to me would be prime candidates to kind of get back to my point of, whomever ends up being champion, neither her nor Vanessa Bourne seem to be in that mold to take on, what's her Shayna Baszler or Bianca Belair. I guess Mia Yim has certainly maybe put herself in that position. It does help that she has easily the most experience professional wrestling wise out of all of them. So yeah, I guess it'll be interesting to see where they go with the women's division after this. Especially if Baszler bugs out of NXT, because it's a pretty big void to fill, and I don't feel like they have someone directly ready to go to fill in her spot should she move along. And I'm trying to think, what was the other? Oh, you kind of brought it up. I'm going to assume, and this can possibly partially lead to other stuff talk. But Cody Rhodes was talking about not having heels and faces. So I'm going to assume that the Forgotten Sons are going to end up winning the Dusty Classic. Because it, A, with Black and Ricochet on the main roster, for the most part, it honestly seems like they're destined for some type of title shot at WrestleMania. Even in the Dusty Classic, they kept the heel face dynamic going for all of the rounds. Unless you want to count Black and Ricochet versus Ciampa and Gargano is a four-face match just because of the DIY reunion aspect of those two team or of that one team. Am I wrong?
I don't know.
Okie doke. Well, that is my assumption, just because they've kind of... The War Raiders, to me, are definitely baby faces. I would not be surprised to see the Forgotten Sons move on along there. Just because, again, they've kind of been keeping... The WWE's been keeping that dynamic alive, despite... I think that... And Cody kind of talked about it more, honestly, after he realized he was getting a lot of backlash about it. Because even the WWE has done a good job to me recently, for the most part, of giving even the people that would probably more typically be called the heel, that they still give them some points to score and some... some type of investment so that some fans still cheer for them. And I feel like that's what he was going for. And it's not getting rid of the heel babyface dynamic. It's just kind of being more realistic about everything.
Right. I think Cody got caught with his pants down a little bit. I mean, not expecting the backlash and not totally explaining himself entirely. He did backtrack and say that there, struggles between good and evil will always be eternally a part of storytelling. I think that he was talking about the tropes of heels and baby faces, pulling hair and trunks and putting your feet on the ropes, maybe stuff like that. The old foreign object in the tights, maybe stuff like that. He's talking about that has become passe, which, show us what you got.
Yeah.
So far, you haven't run a single show outside of All In, which at this point, really, you can count it, but at the same time, you really can't count it.
Right.
First show under the all Elite banner, and then also doing any kind of regular television as well. That's the point I'm at with Cody, the Bucks, and All Elite. It's like at some point you gotta stop telling us, and you gotta show us what you got.
That's kind of it's been kind of funny with them is that I've kind of stopped. Watching Being the Elite, because it's just kind of like, aren't you supposed to have a product by now?
I'm not a fan of Being the Elite or the Double or Nothing preview series. It seems that they've just gotten so into doing inside comedy that it's just like, it's getting eye rolling for me. If other people enjoy it, good for you, but I don't particularly think that a lot of what they've been doing is funny, and I think that Being the Elite, especially last year with the Omega Cody storyline, and then all the build-ups all in. I think that they did a really, really good job using being the elite to you know, build up to, you know, their stories, and now it's just, you know, wink, wink, you know, comedy. it's not for me really anymore, but I guess I still watch at least Being the Elite just to see if something newsworthy happens.
Yeah, I have not even done a good job of that probably the last 3-4 weeks. It's just something that ends up kind of falling by the wayside. Because, yeah, I'm kind of waiting for their product. Like, you've announced it, you've started to make dates and whatnot. I kind of just want to see your product at this point. I mean, even today they signed Ali from Impact, who I do think is another good pickup, but it's just kind of like... They've announced way more people for way more women for their roster than men. So it'll be kind of interesting to see what they do with the men. Like, I think they can have a pretty interesting women's division. Outside of that, like the Young Bucks have like no one to feud with. Jungle Boy and whoever his teammate might end up being.
Obviously they've got Pentagon and Phoenix for Double or Nothing, and then yeah, beyond that, it's a you know, depending on what kind of television deal they get, you know, they've got talent that the world maybe a lot of people have not been exposed to, but for anyone who's actually seen a lot of their stuff. A lot of it's going to feel like a retread because, you know, they've signed up a lot of the talent, quite a bit of the talent that they were already working with quite a bit in the ROH and the Indies.
Oh. yeah, and but I do think that that's where it'll be interesting to see how their booking does go, to see if they can set themselves apart and if they can... tell a genuine story that moves from A to B to C. Because that's still... I've been trying to watch Impact recently, and there's still too much... there's just too much going on there. Like, there's too much nonsense still. There's still a lot of stuff that just doesn't make sense, or they don't do a job of, or a good job of kind of laying the whole situation out. Because I've been watching again probably for like a month and a half, and there's still stuff where it's just like, I'm fucking lost. Like, in a month and a half, if I've been watching something for that long, I shouldn't be lost. Because, like, even when there have been TV shows where people are like, oh, you've needed to watch this from the beginning. If I start watching it and, you know, I might not know a particular incident that they refer to, but there's a lot of context that you can infer from how they're talking about the situation that can kind of at least fill in the gaps for the most part if you didn't see it. But there are times in Impact where it's just like, I still don't know what the fuck you're talking about, guys. Like, I'm just lost. You're not doing a very good job of filling in the blanks here. And there's definitely a lot of good wrestling on that show. But there's still something to be desired, you know, in general. So I'm kind of hoping that All Elite can, you know, as much as I like to kind of bitch about New Japan sometimes and some of their stories, their tropes that they like to use over and over again. Again, it all makes sense to me. Like, I kind of get their build. I get what they're doing. And we really could, I guess, move along to New Japan. And Ring
of Honor. I've got nothing to add about Impact, because I haven't watched it in about a year. So, yes, I mean, we can certainly move on.
Yeah, well, I was trying to use it as a little bit of a transition there. I have not done a great job of keeping up with the New Japan Cup. I have been watching the TV. Yeah, it is one of those things that, kind of going back to Impact, I think I'm just going to be down to WWE, ROH, and New Japan. ROH still does a better job of storytelling despite their ineptitude of getting a product out on a regular basis.
Yeah, and they're once again, I mean, they had to release their big angle to set up their at least their half of the double main event at Madison Square Garden on YouTube, because their TV is still can't catch up.
Well, and that was one of those things where I was watching last week's episode this week, just because, again, I'm kind of behind trying to catch up on Impact to where I went to the tapings, and it dawned on me, I remember Dan posting about being at the ROH show. And I was like, oh shit, that's right. This actually occurred already. I should look at the results. Like, if I didn't watch WWE TV for, a week and a half or something like that, I would have seen the results on Twitter at some point. So the fact that ROH is still hidden enough that I can go a week and a half and not know the results of, because that was supposed to be one of their bigger pay-per-views, right?
The
anniversary show. Yeah, 17th anniversary show, and I went a week and a half not knowing that Matt Taven and Jay Lethal went to a 60-minute draw.
Yes, they did. Oh boy, this. I guess they're really serious about this Matt Taven push. I couldn't. I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of Taven from what I've seen, and I like Jay Lethal a lot. But his title reign has not been setting the world on fire. I look at Lethal and just see a guy who really needed to be in WWE by now. You know, there's just nothing left he can do in Ring of Honor. And even going to AEW is maybe not be the answer, because it's still so many of the same opponents. He was already wrestling in Ring of Honor or there too.
Oh, yeah. Right.
I... Maybe by the time it's all said, Lethal's career is just going to have that void that doesn't look like it's ever going to be filled. But who knows? I mean, yeah. WWE has made some surprising signings over the last several years, so maybe he'll finally get his due. But yeah, I feel like his ROH career is just kind of limping along. I mean, he's a fine standard bearer of a champion since he was. He has essentially been there from the beginning, of course, off and on. He was in a TNA for a while and for a pretty long while, then came back. But yeah, the whole story of this Madison Square Garden show is fascinating, because you know they put the tickets on sale last summer during the big buzz to the lead up to All In, and a lot of people essentially. When it was announced that they were doing Madison Square Garden WrestleMania weekend, a lot of people before it was christened G1 Supercard were even calling the event All In 2. I do remember that.
Hey.
And then in that big buzz period, they were able to sell out Madison Square Garden by the you know, first day of ticket sales, incredible accomplishment, but an audience that was, while never directly advertised, an audience that assumed the Elite was still going to be in Ring of Honor at this point, and New Japan.
Yeah, there at that point, despite the fact that All In was already planned, I would definitely say that anyone that bought those tickets was expecting the Elite to be there. And, yeah, having them missing is a gigantic void. And I do think, you know, I'm a little bit higher on Matt Taven than you are, but, you know, to me, that's been one of the failures of Ring of Honor, is that they've had him with this fake championship, and I guess I'm okay with a fake championship storyline, but they haven't done anything to kind of back up his credibility at all. Like, he's been stuck in a three-man tag team championship for the most part. Or he's been gone in AAA. And it's just like, okay, great. I don't care what he does in AAA. Like, show me him being great as a singles wrestler on your product. And that hasn't happened. And Jay Lethal, he had a great storyline of wanting to get back to being Ring of Honor champion and to defeat all the people that had defeated him in the meantime. And it was great until he became champion, and then they just haven't had a story for him since then. And him and Taven have been feuding for like 3 to 4 months.
Yeah, it has been a lot. And of course, I watch Ring of Honor TV, you know, fairly sporadically. I don't make it a point every week, unfortunately, or maybe fortunately. And yeah, it's, you know, David's been walking around with his fake belt and, you know, calling out Lethal, but, you know, they just kept dragging out the match, I think ROH had two pay-per-views in the interim before, you know, after they started it with Lethal defending the title against other people. And then it's, you know, you get to the Lethal Taven match and you do a 60-minute draw, which is, that's just too long. I haven't seen the match, so I can't be critical of the work in it, but I just, these two wrestlers, at the point that they are at, in their careers, in their feud, doing 60 minutes just does not sound interesting to me. And then to, you know, have to go to the draw and insert Marty Scurll into the proceedings. I mean, it gets a three-way ladder match on the show. Everybody seems to be pretty ladder match happy over the years. And Skrull is that last vestige of the Elite left in Ring of Honor, so I understand why they're pushing him. And they also want him to stay, I assume, once his contract is up. So it wouldn't surprise me if Skrull ends up with the title here, although, of course, they have to be careful about having him giving the title and him still deciding to leave. Not that I think he would leave without, you know, dropping the title, but, you know, you don't want to be caught with your pants down and, you know, just rushing a title change either.
And I guess after doing a 60-minute draw, like, while I agree with you that I understand why you want to add Marty Scurll to that equation, it doesn't give you clarity on the match between Lethal and Taven, which I think you need after especially a 60-minute draw. Like, if it was a 30-minute draw and you pulled those shenanigans, it's like, okay, I can live with a three-way match, but, you know, 60 minutes is kind of a long time not to have a finish. And then to add someone else to the equation, despite them having a fairly big name. And again, right, like, he's another one too, that I guess he's kind of, He's had a little bit of a beef with Matt Taven in the Kingdom since the villain Enterprises has gone up against the Kingdom, who does have the six man. Yeah, I think do they call it or no? They call it 3-man titles or.
Either the six, yeah, I think they use six man. I don't think they use trios or anything like that.
Okay, yeah, so they have the 6-man titles. So you know, Skrull's kind of also been in more of a position like Taven, where he's really done more work as a unit than he has as a singles wrestler. And I guess I'm okay if you want to do 6-man titles, because there is a tradition around the world of having this thing happen. But if you want a big single star, they can't really be involved in that shit. I'm sorry. Like, that's just not for someone that's in the world title picture to me.
No, it definitely is that. I mean, although it does make sense that, you know, these three have been, you know, both Skrull and Lethal Husband intertwined with Taven for a while, and Skrull and Lethal have their history as well. So you know, it works in that respect. Maybe not necessarily what a lot of people were hoping for, which is what we'll get into next with the New Japan half of this equation. But I mean, I guess it's fine to do a 3-way ladder match. Know, the ladder match, at least the ladders at least adds a different variable to the equation, to using that analogy again. hopefully make the match more exciting.
Yeah, and I guess kind of leaning on the New Japan side of things, which so we don't really talk about them all that much, but Jay White is definitely a guy that I've kind of been big on for a while. I really got introduced to him more in ROH than New Japan. And from what I've seen, honestly, still even in the last year on New Japan TV, I've really liked the promos he's cut. He's a real dick. And that's a compliment. And they've certainly done a good job of kind of slowly building him up, because he, has it been 3 straight years now? He's either been in the main event or the co-main event of Wrestle Kingdom? Because he's had a match with, I believe, with Naito once or twice, and he lost to Okada once, and he beat Tanahashi once, maybe?
Yeah, no, I don't think he did do it to Naito. He lost to Tanahashi. He was in the third to...
Oh, okay.
The third to last match, 2 years ago in Tokyo. I mean, he's been consistently pushed. Once again, there's that thing of, when this show was announced, when tickets went on sale, Kenny Omega was the IWGP champion. And yeah, People probably had it in their heads they were going to do Omega versus Okada at Madison Square Garden. Which,
right,
as much as Switchblade has, Jay White has improved, as you know, much as they're, you know, as hard as they're pushing him, if you had that built in your head, he's just not, he can't be anything but a letdown. I mean, they decided to go with him when they knew that Kenny wasn't coming back after the Tokyo Dome. Quickly had him beat Tanahashi, and now he's going to head into, you know, the main event of Madison Square Garden. It looks like it, by the results of the New Japan Cup, as even not having not looked at the results of the New Japan Cup over the last couple of weeks, you know, you can always imagine that it will always be Okada or Tanahashi going for the title at the big show. And if I had to pick one, it would probably be Okada. So, I mean...
Yeah, you're going to get half of the equation. But, And there is at least a little bit of storyline in there, because I feel like he's White has beaten Okada a couple of times.
Yes, yeah. White got the big win at the Tokyo Dome, so that. Once Omega told him he wasn't coming back, he wasn't resigning, you know, they jumped the Jay White push in overdrive. They want their, you know, wouldn't surprise me if they just want a, you know, they want a white heel in there, so for Okada to beat him at Madison Square Garden. That's where it comes down.
Yeah, that is a very blunt way to put it. And I don't think it is blunt, but also not incorrect.
Yeah.
or is correct. I don't think people pictured this when they bought their tickets at all. No.
there might be some kind of a lesson here about, you know, I know when it comes to the big WWE shows, you know, SummerSlam is already sold out, WrestleMania sold out fairly quickly, you know, but maybe when it comes to things like New Japan in the US, you know, or unproven brands, maybe wait till a card starts being announced before you buy your tickets. Maybe.
Yeah, I know that, and not that it's quite the same thing, but I know that Jeremy was a little disappointed when they first announced the New Japan card that went to Charlotte.
How could you not be?
But, I mean, it was kind of funny that in the end he ended up liking it.
Yeah, I mean, it was going to be a... there's enough good talent out there, you know, ROH certainly, you know, bailed them out, you could say, by providing enough talent to put together a show for, a 1,500, 2,000 seat arena in Charlotte, North Carolina. So, and hopefully New Japan learned their lesson about getting their visas in order. I mean, that was kind of the funny part about, you know, the build up to Madison Square Garden. You know, they actually had to post on their website that all of their Japanese talent had their visas together. I think they did, but like last month or something like that.
Well, yeah, like I still don't understand how you had them in order for what they do, 2 or 3 West Coast shows last year. That was one of those things I'm like, hold on, like, you did shows in the U.S. last year. How do you not have your shit together this year? Like, why did you wait until there was a government shutdown to worry about this stuff? Like, you know, the company is supposed to be on top of that stuff. That's not on the wrestlers, you know, to get straight. Come on, man. Like, you should know better than this. To do this stuff well ahead of time, not going, oh shit, because they kind of, it's not like they announced those things far enough in advance. It's just like, okay, we should make sure we have the visas straight, like, because I feel like they announced Charlotte in January or something like that, and they didn't have their shit straight by the. Or, no, it was before January that they announced it. I want to say that the show was in January.
They announced those shows probably around October or November, at least, probably.
Yeah, like, when you announce, like, honestly, like, you should have that stuff straight when you make that announcement, in my opinion. Or at least have it in, even if it's not straight, have it in the works to make sure that everything checks out by, you know, like, make the announcement and then go, oh, okay, well, let's get everyone's visa in order. Again, you just did it earlier that year. Like, why did you think that everything was going to be okay? Oh, man. You know. whatever. You know, it'll still probably end up being a good show again.
Oh, yeah, I definitely it's definitely a show I'm looking forward to. I mean, but there's just gonna be, I mean, just in the three, you know, as one of the three main shows, just, you know, so much, there's gonna be so much good wrestling in it. And, you know, not even getting into all the smaller independent shows that you could that you could partake both in person and via streaming between Thursday and Sunday of WrestleMania weekend.
Yeah, there is a lot to take in. I will advertise for my boys, Absolute Intense Wrestling, the Fight.tv app, I believe.
Yes, I was saving my credits from purchasing Final Battle for this weekend, although I let myself use some of them a couple of months back. But no, I certainly made sure I had enough to purchase the AIW show. If you want there'll be enough good wrestling, but if you want a different type of wrestling show, I think that will certainly provide you with that, a lighter side of wrestling. I mean, when your main event is Swoggle versus Scott Steiner,
yeah,
it's definitely a different type of show.
Yeah, it is 100% different. Yeah, I guess we still have another couple of weeks before we can really get into that one. But
the
videos that Swoggle has been doing have been quite funny. So if you haven't looked at those, you know, take a whopping like maybe 5 minutes of your time out to watch those things. Because they're pretty amusing. Yeah, I think that we can get on out of here. We said that we didn't need to do an hour, but we've gone over that mark now.
Amazingly, yes, we have.
And I will mention that Bell Time beer for this evening was Columbus Brewing Company Creeper Imperial IPA. It is quite tasty. It definitely has that Imperial IPA funk to it that I like to call it. But it also is very lemony, which it's not as tropical as some of the other IPAs that I've had recently. But it does kind of have a nice freshness to cut out some of that bitterness that's supplied by lemon. If you happen to be in my region of the world, you can find that. Unfortunately, a lot of other people are not going to have such good luck. So with that, I will say please rate and review us on iTunes, SoundCloud, or wherever you listen to us. I'm at DeFrango11. He's at Chris Calamine. The brand is at Stunt Granny. Good night.
Later.